Dear beloved on-demand listener, while listening to interviews during Issues Etc. 24, you'll hear appeals to join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. We want you to join. However, the phone number for you to join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club while you're listening on demand is 618-223-8385. 618-223-8385. Just disregard the 877 number given out during the broadcast. You can also join the Issues Etc. Reformation Club online, issuesetc.org. Thanks for listening.
Issues Etc. 24, Hour 15, starts now.
Well, here's a book that many Christians regard as largely irrelevant. Now, you'll hear Christians, especially pop American Christianity, within that pale. You'll hear them reference the book of Leviticus if they want to make a moral point about, say, homosexuality or adultery or something like that, because there are passages there in Leviticus that are quite clear, moral prohibitions against such thing, and good for them that they would hold fast to these teachings. And yet the same Christians might be aghast to discover that the worship life of the Old Testament people of God was, well, highly regulated down to the very smallest detail of their life on a daily basis throughout the course of the year, their offerings made at the tabernacle and later the temple, even the tabernacle and the temple themselves, the way that they were constructed and ornamented and how the priests would have their duties, all of these things dictated down to the detail in the book of Leviticus. And that runs against the grain of our way of thinking about worship. Worship is supposed to be all about freedom, all about anything goes. Maybe we've forgotten something about what the Old Testament people of God knew about the proper worship of God. Maybe we could even be so bold as to call it divine service, God serving us with the forgiveness of sins, and recapture some of what the Old Testament people of God did know, that there is a way to worship God that is centered upon his service to us in the sacrifice of Jesus Christ, and it really isn't anything goes or whatever we feel like. The book of Leviticus is the subject for the next 2 hours of Issues Etc. 24. Dr. John Kleinig joins us. You can as well, 1-877-623-MYIE. Hour 15 and 16 of Issues Etc. 24, covering the book of Leviticus, 1-877-623-6943. You can comment at our Issues Etc. Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. Email us here in the studio, talkback@issuesetc.org, or Twitter us at issuesetc. Joining us to talk about the book of Leviticus, Dr. John Kleinig of Australian Lutheran College and author of the Concordia Commentary on Leviticus. Dr. Kleinig, welcome back.
It's nice to be with you. Blessed Easter season for you.
And to you as well. This would really surprise, I think, a lot of Christians nowadays who have a view of Christian worship as something that is completely unregulated, completely without form, completely spontaneous, and kind of up to the individual worshiper, that the Old Testament worship of God's people, divine service, if you will, was so carefully specified by God himself. Your thoughts there?
Yes. It strikes one immediately when one comes from a modern point of view to New Testament and then Old Testament after that. One of the problems that we have is that when we talk about worship, we see it as something that we do. We worship God. We have a different story in the Old Testament, and particularly in Leviticus. There, the emphasis is on God coming to his people and meeting with them in the divine service. Now, for God to do that, he sets the agenda. The people don't set the agenda. And the most remarkable thing is, if we just take the book of Leviticus, it consists of 36 different speeches from God, and they cover various aspects of worship. Now, in these speeches, God gives his people the regulation for worship. He institutes the divine service through his word, and that same word then empowers the divine service so that God can deliver his blessings to his people. So the important thing that the story of the Old Testament gives us, that in worship, if we can use the modern term, God sets the agenda because God wants to deliver gifts to us. He's the one who determines the means by which we receive his gifts.
Is that still true today?
Very much so. Strikes us when we come from Old Testament to New Testament is that whereas there is many different instructions about worship, many different passages which institute various aspects of worship, there are much fewer things in the New Testament. But still, this applies as well. We don't determine how we celebrate Holy Communion. Jesus does by his word, for example. We don't decide what happens in worship. Jesus does so by his commands and promises.
How important is the concept of holiness in the book of Leviticus and, again, also for Christian worship today?
Yeah, very important. And that's one of the problems that we have in modern Western Christianity. Some years ago, I visited New Guinea, and I met with an ex-student of mine who had learned Hebrew with me here in Adelaide and then gone over to the U.S. to do a master's in a Lutheran seminary and then came back to New Guinea to teach there. Fairly soon after he'd come back, I met with him and asked him how things were over in the States when he was there. He hesitated for a long while and he said, "John, for them nothing is sacred any longer." It's a comment that I've never forgotten. We have problems in the church and problems in worship because we no longer have any sense. It's as if we've become colorblind to God's holiness. From beginning to end, worship has to do with God's holiness. God's holiness not something that we manufacture by ourselves, but something that God gives to us. So if we're going to make sense of worship in the Old Testament, and I'd maintain to the classical tradition of Christian worship, we have to understand the whole theology of holiness that is mapped out more clearly in the book of Leviticus than any other part of the Bible. And that's its great gift to the church, is that it gives a very clear teaching on holiness, and not in a theoretical way. So there's no abstract discussion about holiness there. But God establishes the tabernacle, the divine service, the priesthood, the congregation, and he, as it were, shows them what holiness is by the architecture of the tabernacle, the design of the service, the liturgical calendar, and everything else associated with the divine service. In this way, they learn God's holiness. And that's why it's important that God institutes the divine service. His word sanctifies the service and the people involved in the service.
I guess one of the first things we need to look at is kind of skipping ahead to Leviticus chapter 9, where the actual divine service of the Old Testament tabernacle worship was inaugurated when it was actually put into place. It begins with some rather major sacrifices. Why the shedding of blood for the beginning of the Old Testament divine service in Leviticus?
I'll come to the shedding of blood in a moment, but just the whole divine service and its inauguration. In Exodus chapter 29, God instituted the daily sacrifice of a lamb with a grain offering every morning, every evening. And that formed the heart of the divine service. Now, the book of Exodus ends with the consecration of the tabernacle and the entrance of God's glory into the Holy of Holies. And then you have a whole list of sacrifices that are God institutes in Leviticus chapters 1 through to 7. And then in chapter 8, you get the consecration of the priests. And then in chapter 9, you get the first performance of the divinely instituted service, the inauguration of the divine service. And it's a very, very complex ritual because it's the first time it's enacted. From then on, then, we have the divine service performed at the tabernacle and then later on the temple every morning, every evening, for as long as both tabernacle and temple last. And it is that service then that leads to the communion service in the church. So Leviticus 9 tells the story of its inauguration. We can come to the shedding of blood in a minute, but I'd like to first talk about the basic function of the divine service, if I may.
Please do.
Okay. You may remember that when the Israelites left Egypt, God accompanied them in the glory cloud. You remember the cloud, which was dark in the day and then lit up in the night. It went out before them and led them across the Red Sea and all the way to Mount Sinai. And then that glory cloud appeared once again on top of Mount Sinai. The glory of God was at the peak of the mountain, and the cloud itself covered the whole of the mountain. When the God revealed himself to the people, he did so in a strange way. He didn't do it the way the Israelites expected, coming from the pagan background, by showing his face to them, but he spoke to them from the cloud. And then Moses went on top of the mountain and received all the instructions about the tabernacle and the priesthood. Then when the divine service was inaugurated, the purpose of the divine service, according to God's word to Moses in chapter 9, verse 6, Moses said, "This is the thing that the Lord commanded you to do, that the glory of the Lord may appear to you." So the purpose of the divine service was for God's glory, which was hidden in the Holy of Holies, to appear to the assembled people at the altar in front of the tabernacle. And it did so in the form of fire. Fire came from the Holy of Holies onto the altar, and then it burnt up the offerings on the altar, all the whole list of offerings. And the people then saw the glory of God, God's presence, in the form of a cloud of smoke rising from the altar. So the purpose of the divine service was for God to show his glory, to show his presence, his grace to his people every morning, every evening. To put it another way, the purpose of the divine service is for heaven to come to earth, or people on earth to have access to God, not up in heaven, but at the altar every morning, every evening. If you like, the altar every morning and evening was replaced Mount Sinai as the place where God met with his people.
What did it mean that God would meet with them? I guess what one could wonder is, couldn't God's presence, since his holiness is absolute, be dangerous to his people? What about the divine service there assured the people that God was coming not to destroy, but in fact to show mercy.
Yes, and the whole of the order of the divine service served that purpose. They gave the people safe access to God. God's holiness is a bit like fire. If you bring gasoline in the presence of fire, that fire burns up gasoline. Well, God's holiness is a bit like light. If light comes into the presence of darkness, it dispels the darkness. So God's holiness is gracious, but it's also destructive. And the whole design of the divine service was divine service was arranged in such a way that the people had safe access to God's grace. Everything in the divine service served that end. Would you like me to go through the basic order?
Yeah, please do.
Okay. As I said before, the divine service focused on the offering of a male lamb together with some flour mixed with olive oil and incense on the altar every morning, every evening. Now, there were six stages to the order of the divine service. First of all, the priest on duty slaughtered the lamb and butchered it. And then the ritual began with the pouring out of blood from the lamb against the side of the altar. All the blood was drained from the lamb, and then the blood was splashed on all four sides of the altar. And in this way, atonement was made for the people. The purpose of atonement was to cleanse them from impurity and to bring forgiveness. Only once the rite of atonement had been made with blood on the altar could the priest then safely enter the holy place, and they could meet with God there, and the people could meet with God. So the presupposition for safe meeting with God was their cleansing from impurity and sin. Once that had happened, they were clean in God's eyes. And then the priest on duty washed his hands and feet and entered the holy place and attended to the lamps morning and evening. But the most important thing he did was to bring fire from the altar and incense, and to burn it on the incense altar in front of the Holy of Holies. As he did that, he had the names of the 12 tribes of Israel on his breastplate. He, as it were, brought the people into God's presence in an act of intercession. And then after he'd placed the coals and incense, the most holy incense, on the altar in front of God's throne, which is the holy in the Holy of Holies, the Ark of the Covenant and the Mercy Seat, then the priest came out of the holy place, if you like, bringing the sweetness of God's grace with him. The act of intercession on behalf of the people obtained God's gracious acceptance of them. And then the fourth act was the presentation of the burnt offering. If you can imagine, the priest, first of all, placing the various parts of the lamb all over the altar, the coals on the altar. It's a bit like a barbecue. You know, there's old red-hot coals there, and the priest places, covers the whole surface of the altar with the parts of the lamb. And then he gets some of the flour mixed with olive oil and incense and throws it over the altar. Now, if you know if you put flour on coals, all it produces is black smoke and a stink. But because the flour was mixed with olive oil, and very fine olive oil, it burnt up very quickly and produced a cloud of sweet-smelling smoke from the altar. And that cloud signaled God's acceptance and God's presence in grace with his people. The people could come there to pray to God. And then the fifth part of the daily burnt offering was the performance of the Aaronic benediction by the priest on duty in front of the altar. You know it well, the Lord bless you and keep you. The Lord make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. The Lord look on you with favor and give you peace. So the holy name of God was placed on the people who'd assembled in front of the altar, and the blessing of God was transmitted from God to the people. If you like, the priest went in representing the people and bringing their needs to God, and he came out from God's presence to the altar and then from the altar to bring God's blessing to his people. That's the purpose of the divine service, is for God to bring his blessing to his people. And then the ritual for the daily burnt offering ends with the priests taking the leftover flour mixed with olive oil and baking bread from it. Now, since the flour, part of the flour had been burnt on the altar, the rest of the flour was most holy. And they ate the most holy bread as God's gifts, the bread from his table in the holy place. For the priests on duty, the daily service culminated in a holy meal. A holy meal with most holy bread that by which God shared his holiness with his people. Just one thing about the daily burnt offering, the daily order of service. At its heart, you have the what looks like a ordinary meal in the ancient world. You have bread, you have olive oil, you have meat, and you have wine. But it looks as if this meal is being offered to God, but in fact it's turned around. God takes these things and makes them holy and spreads a meal, a holy meal, a meal of blessing for his people, for the priests.
That's a bit complicated.
Do you want to pick up anything there?
Yeah, we'll on the other side of the break, we'll pick up there. I think it's a great outline to consider how it is that here in Leviticus, we have God specifying these things all so that he might deliver to his people the cleansing, the sacrifice, the atonement for sin by the shedding of blood. When we come back, some might say, well, this is all very elaborate. That's typical of the Old Testament. The people were being taught an object lesson. Did they actually receive the forgiveness that these things pointed toward? The book of Leviticus is our study with Dr. John Kleinig. It's Issues Etc. 24. We're in hour 15 of Issues Etc. 24, and we'll have about another 90 minutes on Leviticus. Your questions and your comments are welcome. 1-877-623-6943. 877-623-MYIE or talk back at issuesetc.org. More Issues Etc. 24 with Leviticus after this.
Here comes the sun, and I say it's all right.
The cross is always relevant. You're listening to Issues Etc.
This is Scott in Oakwood, Illinois, with a few thoughts on what Issues Etc. means to me. I was first exposed to Issues Etc. because of Spirituality of the Cross by Jean Edward Veith. I couldn't put the book down and eventually gave my copy to a Roman Catholic friend. And in the process of replacing it at cph.org, I bought a 3-CD set of Issues Etc. interviews with her. I found the show again while putting in extra hours at school and streaming Issues Etc. from a certain Lutheran radio station of ill repute. I used to stop at Panera on my 42-mile commute home to download the podcast because I had no home internet access. I went out of my way to access Issues Etc. on demand because it was intelligently done Christian radio that had Jesus' death and resurrection at the forefront of its theology, unlike my local family-friendly Fatal to Your Health FM radio station. Issues Etc. is ongoing catechesis for both me and my wife and helped us get through a tough period in our church when we weren't hearing Jesus Christ and Him crucified in the sermons. We both enjoy listening to the program, especially on Fridays with Soundbite of the Week. What Issues Etc. means to me is a far smaller matter than what it means to Christianity at large. It brings together a community of like-minded confessional Lutherans from across denominational lines, alleviating the stress of, am I the only one? It proclaims the work Christ has done on our behalf and sounds the alarm when false teaching enters our midst. LCMS Inc. lost a great asset when firing you guys, but it only makes Issues Etc. better because it is able to openly criticize false teachings arising from anywhere. Please continue to bring this Christ-centered, cross-focused message to the world for many years to come. From the bottom of an on-demand listener's heart, I thank you.
And thank you, Scott, in Oakwood, Illinois, and for all those of you listening live or on demand to Issues Etc. 24. We got great news from Matt in Fort Wayne, Indiana. He reports that Concordia Theological Seminary there in Fort Wayne, they're streaming Issues Etc. 24 in the Student Commons all day today. Doesn't get any better than that.
And thanks to Marilyn Graham. She's the newest member of the Reformation Club. Marilyn's in Wheaton, Illinois. Thank you very much, Marilyn. And let's also say thank you to some current members of the Reformation Club, Jerry and Betty Alm in Grangeville, Idaho, Robert Kiefer in Auburn, Indiana, and Matthew and Shannon Kite in Baldwin, Missouri. Thanks for supporting Issues, etc.
Did I hear you sucking on a cough drop?
No, you know what? I have to have my throat's scratchy, so I have to have something to take a bit of the scratchy away. And yeah, I'm cheating. It's a piece of gum. So I need some help here. I mean, about 16 hours in, and I don't think out of all the years that I've been behind a microphone in one way or another that my voice has sounded this poor after being on the air for a while. You know,
it's just being up. That's all it is. I mean, I don't think it's a matter of talking too much. Did you guys see me running by? Oh, you have the blinds closed. You didn't see me running by the window?
During the break, I just took a couple laps, too.
I am just completely embarrassing you guys out there. I mean, the people who are just showing up for work, which is, it's still early for people to show up for work, but there are enough Collinsvilleites or whatever they call themselves out there wondering what this middle-aged guy is doing out there running around the parking lot. But I've fallen asleep sitting down, lying down. Occasionally behind the wheel, but never almost falling asleep while standing up. So, got to get the blood going, get it all working. You guys are like made out of what? Iron. I mean, neither of you, especially Craig, he's literally planted himself there and stays completely wide awake the entire time. I'm in here moving around, trying to stay, keep the blood going. Craig, it's all pure mental concentration with him.
It's hard to look this awake, let me tell you.
Hey, Tim in Canada on our Facebook.com/issuesETC page writes, "Hello, son. Still sounding good. Thanks for listening up there in Canada. And again, during Issues Etc. 24, we're asking you to help support the Christ-centered, cross-focus outreach of Issues Etc. by joining our monthly or annual giving program, the Issues Etc. Reformation Club. You can call now. Craig and I are standing by, patiently waiting to take your pledge at 877-623-6943, 877-623-MY-IE, or You can donate online, issuesetc.org, issuesetc.org.
Don't forget, Jeff, in just about 90 minutes, we'll draw once again for another bundle package and another copy, signed copy of Pastor Matt Harrison's book, The Little Book of Joy. So that's coming up in another hour and a half. You can give us a call and tell us you want to be part of the Reformation Club, 877-623-MY-IE, 877-623-6943, or you can make a secure online donation at our website, issuesetc.org.
Dr. John Kleinig is our guest. We're looking at the book of Leviticus, another 90 minutes with him, Issues, Etc., 24. I would say we're in the home stretch. About 4 hours, no, not four, 8 hours to go after we conclude the book of Leviticus. This is key to understanding. We don't leave the book of Leviticus behind, except for those commands that pertain to the moral law, because there's much to be learned, Old Testament and New Testament, about the nature of true Christian worship, as we've already seen here. So the divine service has this form to it. And I guess one thing was unclear. Is this a daily thing for the people of God during the time of tabernacle worship, Dr. Kleinig?
Yes, it's twice every day, the morning and the evening. So it coincides with the morning and evening meal, roughly speaking. So it's twice every day. Not quite in our timing, but say 9 o'clock in the morning and 3 o'clock in the afternoon. So the same offerings were presented morning and evening, and in between them, the people brought their own offerings. The divine service was done by the priests on behalf of the whole nation. It was the national service. And then the people could come midday, bringing their own offerings and prayers to God.
Brett in Harrisburg, Pennsylvania asks via email, why does God go into such depth on the rules concerning the sacrificial offerings for concerning Moses? And he thanks us for the program. Why does he go into such depth?
I don't know. Most of those why questions can't be answered except very tentatively and speculatively. I know that each one of them has its reason, but it seems to me that God had a very difficult task to do in establishing the divine service, just as he has a very difficult task to do with us, because people bring their own baggage, if you like, into church. It's not as if the people in the ancient world didn't have various forms of worship. They had thousands of different rituals and different forms of worship. And so God has to protect, if you like, his holiness and protect the delivery of his grace, his mercy, his blessing to his people from all the various pagan forms of distortion. If I can just take one example out of many possible examples, everywhere in the ancient world, people were interested in the supernatural realm, and it was the spirits of the dead who gave them access to the supernatural world, and it was held that they brought supernatural blessing to them. One of the regulations that God gave, both to the people and the priests, was that the priests had to avoid any contact with anybody who was dead, likewise the people. And if they had contact with a dead person, they were unclean and had to have ritual cleansing. In this way, the Old Testament laws, if you like, cut the connections with animistic paganism. Now, I could illustrate, give many other illustrations like that, but there's two kinds of laws. One has to do with the elaborate divine service, the positive side of it, and then there's the negative side, guarding against the falsification and the manipulation of God by means of worship. One of the things that we need to realize that worship is not one-dimensional. Either in the Old Testament or New Testament, God doesn't give us one blessing, but he gives us grace upon grace, blessing upon blessing. And we quite often reduce God's gifts, God's many gifts, to a single gift. So if I can just go back and illustrate from the daily service, you remember the order begins with the rite of atonement. Then you have the burning of incense in the holy place. Then you get the presentation of the burnt offerings on the altar, the column of smoke by which God made himself available, accessible to his people in a gracious way, and then culminating in the performance of benediction. Okay, that's the basic pattern. Now, each of those parts, in each of those parts, God is at work. First of all, God forgives his people and cleanses them from sin so that they can come into his presence without defiling and desecrating his holiness. They have safe access to God. Just as for us, our divine service begins with confession and absolution so that we can approach God and come to Holy Communion with a clear conscience. And then you have the burning of incense by which the priest on duty secured God's acceptance of his people and the assurance, if you like, of God's favour. Then, thirdly, you had the burnt offering itself, by means of which God met with his people, gave them access to his grace, and made them holy. And then all of that culminates in God giving his blessing. But if you ever look at the Aaronic benediction, it's not just one blessing. There's the Lord bless you and keep you, so there's protection from evil powers. God bless you and keep you, make his face shine on you and be gracious to you. God be favorably disposed to you. God lift up his face or countenance upon you and give you peace. So there's many different details because God delivers so many gifts to his people in and through the divine service. We could talk about something similar in the New Testament, but things change there because the focus is on Christ and his presence with us rather than on this elaborate ritual.
Talk, if you would, about the necessity for what you call ritual purity in order for people to both administer, that would be the priests and the Levites themselves, these two classes of servants in the divine service, and then also the concept of ritual purity with regard to the people's participation in the divine service.
Yes. It's a dangerous thing for a holy God to meet with his people, because the people are unclean and unholy and sinful. Now, if you bring a holy God into the presence of a holy of an unholy, sinful people, then you have a recipe for disaster. God's holiness coming into contact with what's unclean, unholy, incompatible with it, destroys it. If somebody or something unclean, and something unclean is that which is incompatible with God and his holiness. If something that's incompatible with God's holiness comes into the presence of God, then that desecrates God's holiness, and God reacts with the fire of his wrath to destroy that which is unclean. Now, it's not a problem if it's a thing, but if it's a person, the unclean person is destroyed. So before somebody or something comes into God's presence and can receive God's holiness, can be sanctified, that person or that thing needs to be cleansed from impurity. The closer you come to God in the Old Testament, the more you receive his holiness. The closer you come to God, the greater the demands for purity, ritual purity, liturgical purity, if you like. There's a minimal requirements for purity for people who don't come to the tabernacle, who just live out in the camp. But if an Israelite comes into the courtyard and approaches God, then they need to be cleansed from certain forms of physical impurity. The Levites who come closer to God have more stringent demands for purity. And the high priest, who shares most fully in God's holiness, has the greatest requirements for ritual purity, to make sure that he doesn't desecrate God's holiness, because if God's holiness is desecrated, then people will experience God's wrath rather than his grace in the divine service.
People hear this and they are perhaps are saying this, it sounds so primitive. It sounds almost like a pagan idea. How is it different from the notions that the pagans had, who also had their temples, if you will? They also had their rituals and sacrifices whereby they believed they were appeasing the wrath of their gods or currying the favor of their gods. How is this Old Testament thing given to God's people in Leviticus different from that?
There is some overlap. There's some connection. And this is because every human being on earth has a sense that they are not the way they should be. And that's a very basic, instinctive thing. And it's quite a physical thing. If I can just illustrate, say, for example, every morning I have a shower and I brush my teeth. If I don't shower and brush my teeth, then I feel unclean, unpresentable. It's something that's very, very instinctive. People who study various societies would say that this distinction between clean and unclean is as close to a universal cultural pattern that you could get. Now, it's only in the Old Testament that this sense of impurity, which is innate in each of us, is connected with God's holiness. Pagan societies, you usually divide people into two groups of people. There are those who are clean, that's usually my group, and then there's those who are unclean. But for the Old Testament, all human beings are more or less unclean in God's sight, and all purity and all holiness comes from God. Just to go back to the original question, that sense of impurity, which many people, and I've heard this again and again from friends and colleagues and people that I meet, who say it's very, very primitive, is in fact fundamental to us. I don't know whether any of you have heard people say, oh, I couldn't come to church. Why? Because the roof would fall in. That's the basic feeling of every human being, that if you come into the presence of any God, but if you come into the presence of the living God, God's presence exposes that which is incompatible with him, impurity. And one experiences that not just mentally and emotionally, but also physically, in the sense of being unclean. The demand for, the requirement for purity is even more stringent in the New Testament. than the Old Testament, as you may remember. Whereas it was sufficient to have physical purity in the Old Testament, what Jesus demands is purity of heart, complete, total purity. And the book of Hebrews says that the blood of Jesus cleanses our consciences so that from dead works so that we can serve the living God. I reckon that instead of this being very primitive and incomprehensible to modern people, I think that most modern people, particularly young people, have an acute sense of impurity. This is evident in so many different ways. People have pointed out, for example, that the ecological movement got nowhere until people identified ecological disorder with impurities. Now, it has nothing to do with impurity, but as soon as you label it as impurity, then it sells itself. I think that one of the secrets of evangelizing, if I can put it that way, people not just in Africa and in New Guinea and in Asia and in Muslim countries, but also to re-evangelize young people in the West. One of the best ways in which we can present the Christian faith to them is in terms of cleansing from impurity. Because most young people, I find, have an acute sense that they live in a contaminated world and that they are somehow contaminated. And this contamination diminishes them and robs them of life and blessing and many good things. As I said, you can see it most clearly in the appeal of the ecological movement, which sells its message by identifying ecological disorder in terms of environmental impurity.
Dan,
now that's a long answer for a very short question, but I wanted to spend some time with it because I think there's much more here that we can explore and that is very, very useful for us. If I can give an illustration, one of my best friends, when he heard that I was doing a commentary on Leviticus, immediately got stuck into me about this stupid stuff about ritual impurity. And, you know, the kind of thing that clean and unclean animals and a woman who menstruates is unclean and a man who has ejaculation of semen at night becomes unclean and all this kind of stuff. And he says, this is about as stupid as you could get. And I very politely tried to explain it to him. And this came resulted in a very lengthy discussion. And then he himself confessed that admitted that on the one hand, he had this acute sense of which in which he had to have clean clothes every day, a clean shirt and washing. And that for when his wife had their first baby, he felt that he couldn't touch her. And he couldn't work out why this was the case. So, you know, this sense of impurity, I think, is far more common than we allow. We don't talk very much about it, and we don't have, if you like, a code to discuss it the way the Old Testament and maybe Jews and Mohammedans, Muslims, do.
Dan in Columbus. Yes, go ahead.
Sorry. Keep going.
Well, Dan in Columbus, Ohio, has this question. He says, it's interesting to read Leviticus and its rites in light of Hebrews 9 and 10. In these sacrifices, there is a reminder of sins, he says. If we didn't have the shedding of blood, we might lose sight of the real consequence of sins, that there are more than just temporal consequences. Your thoughts there with about 2 minutes before we take a break.
Yes. The sacrifices don't just remind us of sins. The law does that. God's law exposes sins and reminds us of sin. I'd rather put it positively. That it's not just that they the sacrifices show us the consequence of sin, which is death, but that the blood which comes from the sacrificed animal becomes then the means by which we receive purification, cleansing, justification. And that's because God chooses to use, the blood of the animal and then the blood of his son to cleanse us and to make us pure and holy in his eyes. So I don't think it's just a reminder of sin or even the consequences of sin. It is that, but it has a very strong positive function. In fact, if you like, our whole redemption, our cleansing, our sanctification, all God's gifts are given, delivered to us through the blood of his son.
Well, when we come back, we're going to talk more about the book of Leviticus. We're done with hour one on Leviticus with Dr. John Kleinig and ready for hour two of the same book, Issues, Etc. 24, continuous live Bible study. The sun is up, and we're starting the morning portion heading into the afternoon portion of Issues, Etc. 24, well past the halfway point. I invite your questions or your comments as we talk about, well, essentially, Christian worship with the book of Leviticus and Dr. John Kleinig of Australian Lutheran College and author of the Concordia Commentary on Leviticus. Our call-in number is 1-877-623-MYIE, 877-623-6943. Email us here in the studio with questions or comments, anything on the book of Leviticus, talkback at issuesetc.org, talkback at issuesetc.org, or you can Twitter us at issuesetc. And as so many have been, you can leave questions or comments for us at our Issues Etc. Facebook fan page, facebook.com/issuesetc. I'm Todd Wilkin. This is Issues Etc. 24.
Faithful confession trumps company loyalty. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Greetings, brothers. What does Issues Etc. mean to me? Well, being a pastor in Canada, we are not given the same opportunities usually to attend many of the seminars and conferences that are held in the United States. And I know for myself and several other pastors, Issues Etc. proves to be a great source of continuing education. The program keeps us engaged in thinking theologically and also with the latest issues that arise in our society and the church. And I can say I have learned much from Issues Etc. in the 8 years I have served in the parish since graduating from the seminary. And for this, I am most grateful. And also, I just wanted to note that since the rebirth of Issues Etc., I have noticed a distinct improvement in your thrill music, at least I think that's what it is called in the radio biz. The music is always matched thematically to the topic under discussion, but also is often just plain old good music. I have often wondered how you come up with all the music you do that matches so well to the topics under discussion. Well done. Thanks a lot. This is Pastor Mike Keith from Our Savior Lutheran Church in Fort Qu'Appelle, Saskatchewan, Canada. God's blessings upon your continued work at Issues Etc.
Yes, it truly is a worldwide outreach, and we love our neighbors to the north up in Canada, especially those who are listening to Issues Etc. 24 live or on demand via podcast. We love our on-demand listeners. And we've got lots of people listening here in the States as well. Here's an email we just received from Brian in Utah. He says, well, this morning I tore myself from sleep to make sure I could hear the Leviticus study by Dr. Kleining live. Bless you guys for this 24-hour study. I also really enjoyed Pastor Brian Wolfmiller's Book of Job study, a personal favorite. What a wonderful way to give added opportunity for us on-demand listeners to listen live for once, to think deeply about the Word of God, and, of course, to support our favorite podcast. Thank you for being a constant Christ-centered, cross-focused lifeline to the Word of God. It has meant a great deal to me, both as a pastor and as a Lutheran family man here in the theological and cultural wilds of Salt Lake City. Christ's blessings be with the staff at Issues, etc., and all your listeners. Thanks so much for listening in Utah, Brian, and thanks for becoming part of the Issues, etc. Reformation Club. And that's part of what we're doing here during Issues, etc. 24, is encouraging, inviting you to join our monthly or annual giving program, the Issues, etc. Reformation Club. Four levels of giving, anywhere from us, you can join for as low as $25 a month, or a one-time annual gift of $250. That's the confessor level. You can pledge your support right now, 877-623-6943. It's 7 o'clock in the morning, Central Time here in the Midwest, 877-623-MYIE, or make a donation online, issuesetc.org.
Jeff, as you said earlier, operators are standing by. I feel like we're getting into a swing here, don't you? Into the swing of things. And, you know, we started out, first couple of breaks were a bit rough, but we're in the swing of it now. I think we're getting the hang of it. So let's thank folks who previously joined the Reformation Club. Let's say thank you to Mark Young in Cedar Park, Texas. Thanks to Mr. and Mrs. Rick and Karen Durham from Monroe, Michigan. And thank you to Mrs. Deborah Sill Springer from Wichita, Kansas. Thank you for supporting Christ-centered, cross-focused talk radio, Issues, etc.
And every 2 hours, so an hour from now, we always have a drawing, and everybody who joins the Issues, etc. Reformation Club during Issues, etc. 24 is put into that drawing, and we draw for an autographed copy of Pastor Matt Harrison's new book, A Little Book on Joy, an autographed copy of that book. And also you receive an LPR bundle package, the much coveted LPR bundle package that we only give away to people who visit our studio or who win Soundbite of the Week, Issues, Etc. Soundbite of the Week on Fridays. That's an I Have Issues t-shirt, an Issues, Etc. travel mug, pen, and bumper sticker. So please join the Issues, Etc. Reformation Club during Issues, Etc. 24, issuesetc.org, or 1-877-623-6943.
Jeff, you know, I don't know how you feel about it. I think you feel the same way I do. And that is that the Reformation Club, for us and our listeners, is a win-win. And it helps us so we can budget our expenses more efficiently. Kind of helps us, you know, get an idea month to month. We know what's coming in, or we know you know, where we need to be by the end of the month for our budgeting, because as everyone knows, we do rely upon you, our listener, for all the costs that bring you this radio outreach. So we depend upon you for every dollar, from every dollar from paying for airtime to salaries to supplies. So it's a vital part of our budgeting here at Issues, etc. And it's also for you, it's a win. You know, besides the satisfaction of bringing Issues, etc. to yourself and others around the world, you know, you get a few perks. So t-shirts, books, things of that nature. So it's a win-win in that way. And give us a call and let us know that you're interested in the Reformation Club. Telephone numbers, 877-623-MYIE. 877-623-6943, or you can make a secure online donation at our website, www.issuesetc.org.